Hello, this is Greg Hufker, and welcome to the first Illinois Top Times podcast. Today we have with us Nick Simmons on the line. And if you're new to the sport or have been living under a rock, let me fill you in on what a terrific honor it is to have Nick share his time, knowledge, and experience with us. Not only is Nick the founder and CEO of Run Gum, a terrific product that helps runners boost their performance in practice and in races, but Nick is easily the most accomplished American 800-meter runner of more than the last decade. Nick is a two-time Olympian, a two-time World Championship finalist, a six-time USA Outdoor Champion, a seven-time NCAA All-American, a nine-time state champion from Idaho. He was the 2013 World Silver Medalist and the fourth fastest American of all time at 800 meters. Welcome, Nick, and thank you so much for joining us here at Top Times.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I have been very lucky to see you compete in person a couple times. I can vividly remember your freshman year when you were running out in St. Lawrence, New York. It was the first time I was lucky enough to have an athlete qualify for the national championships, and you could tell that there was something very special there. And so Illinois Top Times, the mission is kind of to provide a great championship experience for high school athletes here in Illinois. They host an indoor championship and to provide resources for those athletes and for college coaches to be able to connect to help them continue their careers and follow their passion. And Randy Anderson, who kind of administrates and runs the website and the meet, reached out to some coaches to get some questions that we could maybe help provide some resources, information for athletes. And one of the themes was, you know, an athlete like yourself, the most accomplished, you know, and certainly the last over decade as an 800-meter runner, you chose to run at a Division III college. And so some people were curious, like, what led you to that decision and curious about your experience there at Willamette?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I'm one of the few Olympians on the U.S. track and field team that went to a Division III school. But certainly there's a lot of Olympians out there who've gone to smaller schools. And, you know, kids think that you have to go D1 to get where you want to go, and that's not always the case. For me, when I was looking at colleges, I wanted to have the full college experience. I wanted to study biochemistry, which a lot of schools said was incompatible with their academic and athletic programs. I wanted to be in a fraternity and have a part-time job and have a social life. And, you know, really, I just wanted the full college experience. And I felt that going to a Division I school, I was going to be an athlete student and not the other way around. I wanted to be a student athlete. And so I chose a Division III school and had a really great time for 4 years doing everything that I wanted to do. And fortunately, I was able to get my degree in biochemistry, but I was also able to run pretty fast.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned getting to see your freshman year. And you ran 1:49.51, which was the fastest time of the year for Division III, and 3:46.66, both of those in the final on the same day, on not necessarily a fast day there in upstate New York.
Yeah, it was a pretty cold and rainy day, as I recall.
Yeah, it certainly was. And so, you know, obviously it was important to you to look at the whole picture in terms of the person you're going to be and the experience you wanted to have. But after running so fast as a freshman, I'm sure you had people telling you that you needed to move on to Division I school after your freshman year. What were some of the things that were important to you about continuing to stay at a Division III school?
I mean, if I'm being totally honest, I probably should have gone to a Division I school just because I had done everything in Division III there was to do, right? I'd already won the title in the 8 and the 15. But for me, my academics were more important, and leaving in the middle of my biochemistry program seemed to be a mistake. And I went on to win every single 800. Every single 800 I ever ran in college, I won. And that's not to brag about that. That's actually a huge, huge coaching error. I wasn't being placed in races that were tough enough for me. I wasn't being challenged. You know, after the NCAA D3 season was over, I should have been racing outside of the Division III. I should have been going to USA's. I should have been going to Europe. I should have been, in better races during the season when I was going to Stanford or going to Mount SAC. Mm-hmm. So I think that it can be done from a D3 school, But coaching is the most important part. It doesn't matter whether it's D1, D2, NAIA, D3. All that matters is that you find a program that works for you and you find a coach that's going to fight for you and get you in the races you need to be in, and a program that really clicks for you. You know, I didn't get along with the head coach at Willamette very well, but the head strength and conditioning coach, Sam Lepre, and I got along great, and he works with me on a daily basis now 20 years later and has overseen my entire program for 20 years through thick and thin, through three other head coaching changes. I mean, for me, the Willamette track and field program didn't work very well, but the Nick and Sam program worked really, really well. And he is the guy that's been with me every step of the way through two Olympic teams, and we've created several companies, and he's my business partner in RunGum as well.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And I think that, you know, while maybe not every connection was exactly what you want, you had a really important coaching connection and relationship there for someone that you trusted to help mentor and guide you, that you knew was looking after you and had your best interest and wanted you to be all that you could be as a person, as a student, as an athlete. And it's hard to place a value on how important that is in the lifelong development of a career.
Yeah, I mean, no one does it by themselves. If you look at any Olympian, every single one of them has a team around them. And I set up a phenomenal team in my early 20s. I had Coach Sam by my side. Jimmy Radcliffe was my strength and conditioning coach at University of Oregon. I've had several other coaches write my workouts, from Frank Gagliano to Mark Rowland, now Danny Mackey, who have all written phenomenal workouts. My agent, Chris Lane, my physio, Chris Wedstein. I mean, the amount of resources that go into getting an athlete on the starting line healthy at Olympic Games, it kind of boggles the mind. And it's an expensive endeavor and time-consuming endeavor, but that's what makes it so rewarding when everybody shows up to London or Beijing or Rio and celebrates that moment.
Yeah, that's awesome. One of the things that I thought was terrific that you mentioned and interesting is you talked about your degree in biochemistry and your education was very important to you. And I think it's great for young athletes to hear that. But also, I'm sure you'll be able to attest to that, but they sometimes have this idealistic picture in their mind what college will be like. And, you know, they'll have some classes that they'll go to, and then, you know, they go right to practice. And I know here at Illinois Wesleyan, we have athletes that sometimes have a four-hour science lab that will run from 2 to 6. And so, you know, we'll have to find a way for them to run with a teammate that has a similar, or they might be running on their own that day. But, you know, that's the demands of the academic load. Is that some things that you experienced in college as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, again, probably the main reason I chose Willamette is, you know, you look at the statistics, the chances of anybody going pro in any sport are very, very slim. And I'm a very pragmatic person. I said, well, I'd love to run in college, but the chance of me ever going pro, of course, are almost not zero. So I said, the important thing for me to do now is to get a great degree that I can go on and have a good job. I wanted to go into medicine. So I was looking around at schools that had great pre-med programs, and Willamette had a fantastic one. And when I told Division I schools, many of them that I talked to, hey, I really want to major in pre-med, they said, absolutely not. You're going to be in labs every afternoon, and our practice is from, you know, 3 to 5. So it is incompatible. And I said, well, but aren't I going to the school to get an education? And to be honest, I know it sounds crazy and it sounds funny, but no, you're not. And some of these schools, when you're under a scholarship, you are not there to get an education. That is your second priority. Your number one priority is to compete well and win for that school. And that seemed like a fun idea, but not really the most practical idea. I wanted to get a great education, and my second priority would be athletics. So putting academics first meant going to Willamette for me. Now, that's not the case for everybody, but for me, I knew I needed to be in a program that was small, that could help me through some of the tougher courses that I needed to take. And, you know, I rag on Willamette a little bit because I think that they mismanaged me as an athlete, but from an education standpoint, I think that I got one of the best educations that you can get. It was expensive, but it was a great education.
Yeah, and that's always it's a balance, you know, when you're finding all those pieces that end up to be the right fit for you. And like you said, there's some some students that go to Division I schools and they work with the coach, and the program has a nice philosophy that allows them to still get a great education. But others, they definitely are letting you know the investment that they're making in you and yeah. where your priority needs to lie.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've never been good at being told what to do. And I from a very young age, I knew that about myself. And taking a scholarship seemed to me to put me in debt to a coach, and I didn't like that feeling. So fortunately, I was never offered an athletic scholarship. It made my decision real easy. I had a couple academic scholarships, and I took one at Willamette.
Yeah.
And the coach there actually, he had coached at the University of Oregon, and he tried to coach it like a D1 program. And I think that was his biggest failing, is that, you know, at a smaller school, especially at Division III university, the kids are there because they love to run. They love the team aspect, and that's what I loved about Willamette the most. You know, the kids that came out for practice weren't the best runners by any means, but they loved being there, and they were choosing to be there, and that's what made it fun for me. And that's what probably of all the memories I have of collegiate running, you know, going out there with my buddies after school and knowing that none of us were getting paid for it. We were just there because we wanted to see how good we could get. That was really a satisfying thing about running at that age.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And then, you know, those relationships that you build can last a lifetime. You know, those people can be lifelong friends, and it's such a terrific experience. And you know, as a Division III coach, I'm sometimes, you know, recruiting a wide range of ability levels, and there's some people that are uncertain whether they're good enough to run in college. And you know, I really do reinforce what you were just talking about. If you've enjoyed that experience in high school with your teammates and the people that you've done it with, you'll love it in college, and it'll be a powerful.
Well, and, you know, I hear this from kids a lot. Am I good enough to run in college? I don't even need to know your times, and I can say yes. There is a program for every single kid, no matter whether you're a 148 kid coming out of high school, or a 220 male coming out of high school. No matter what your time is, I guarantee you there's a program that will let you walk on and let you participate. So it may not be University of Oregon, but I promise you, for every single kid out there, there's a program, a collegiate program, that you can go and run at.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's great to hear an accomplished athlete like yourself, you know, an Olympian and silver medalist at the World Championships, reinforcing that to kids, because I think that's so important to continue that grassroots development of track and field in our country.
Yeah, and you know, even if you say, you know, I know I can't walk on a D1 program, every D1 program has a running club, and RunGum actually just hired a really awesome kid named Jake, who's part of the University of Oregon Running Club. And I would argue that this kid works just as hard or harder than any of the D1 ducks that I've met. And his love for running is as true as anyone that I've ever seen. And we're honored to have him at RunGum.
Yeah, that's really great. And that's fantastic that the things that you're doing with RunGum, and I want to get in more to that in a little bit, but one of the questions that I got from a coach was, you've always been a kind of come-from-behind guy in the 800, and how did that strategy evolve through your career, and, you know, what kind of led you to be, you know, to were the things that you focused on in training to help you finish well, or how did that kind of strategy come about for you?
You know, it's funny that people think I'm this come-from-behind guy, but I've actually led wire-to-wire in many races before. For me, I often am trying to run my fastest 800. And for me, for any human, I argue, to do that, running a plus 2 second differential or maybe a plus 3 second differential in the 8 is the optimal way to do it. You look at any of the fastest 800s throughout history, including David Rudisha's world record, including my 142 that I ran in that same race, a plus 2 second differential is the perfect formula. And I happen to not have great leg speed, but I have an incredible endurance engine. And so when people go out, when sprinters who come up to the 8 go out in 48, 49 seconds, that's about as fast as I can run for 400 meters, so I'm just not going to be there. But I can back off 5% and run 50 flat and come back in 52. You know, David Rudisha, when he ran the world record, I think he was 49.5 and came back in 51X. And I was out in 50 and came back in 52. So,
yep.
You know, you watch London Olympic finals, and I'm dead last at the bell.
Yep.
And you watch the world championships 2013, where I won a silver medal, and I'm second, you know, tied for the lead at the bell. But I split the exact same first lap. So it really has nothing to do with everybody else. It just has to do with where I feel I can exert the amount of effort that I need to run a fastest race possible.
Yeah. And that, I think that's terrific too. I mean, that highlights for kids is that you need to know how you run best and not get caught up with necessarily how everyone around you is running. You know, if they've gone out too fast and you know your race plan, and just because you're last at, 400 meters of the Olympic final doesn't mean that's where you're going to finish. The training and the team that you've put together to help support you, you know, that all leads you to being your best when you need to be, and trusting that training and focus and your race plan is so important. And obviously that comes with some experience, but you definitely are a guy that watching you race, you can see the confidence that you know how to run your race, and you're confident no matter how other people go out that you can execute it and do extremely well.
Well, thank you. I always tried to be. You know, everybody's so worried about what other people are doing that they kind of just lose track of what their best skill set is. And I think, you know, this is funny. You guys might not believe me, but I've had the pleasure of watching, you know, hundreds of professional and elite runners prepare for races, and many of them do not look at heat sheets before they race. And I always wonder, because I actually like to look at them because it doesn't make me stressed out. I'm curious. But some of the world's best athletes will not look at a heat sheet or a race starting list before they race.
Yeah.
I'd always ask them why, and they said, it doesn't matter. And they just, I don't really care who races. I'm running my race, and it is what it is at the end of the day. And I really respect that. You know, just run your race and leave it all on the line, and then it is what it is. And you can't really you can be this disappointed with the results, but you can't be angry with yourself for not having given yourself the best shot.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, and it's, you know, I know there are coaches that stress that to the athlete. Don't worry about who's in the race. Don't worry about what heat you're in. You know, run your race, and it's great to hear. You know, you talk about that, and then talk about knowing other world class athletes that also, you know, live that out. You know, that they don't worry about who else is in the race or what the heat sheets look like. They know when their race is. They're going to show up. They're going to execute their plan. And that's all that they need to worry about.
Really, truly is.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. We had a question from Jason Palmer, who's the girls' coach at Shelbyville here in Illinois. And I always get a little hesitant about spending too much time talking about specific workouts. You've been super generous with your experience that you provide those to some people. But it's always something that coaches and athletes enjoy hearing about. Like, what's a favorite workout for you as you're, you know, maybe tuning up for a big race?
Yeah, well, first of all, I appreciate you noting that I am very generous with my training. I never liked this idea that athletes and coaches would just hold their training secrets to themselves and never let anyone in on it. It just seemed absurd to me. So I actually published my training log, my 2012 training log.
Yeah.
Every single workout that I ran, every mile that I ran, every weight that I lifted leading into the 2012 Olympic Games, you know, I just put that on the internet for people to have for free. So if you go to rungum.com, you can download that right now. And if you read that, you'll know what my favorite workouts are to prepare for a championship. It's usually 3x400 off of 4 minutes rest as fast as you can run it. And when I'm really, really fit, I can average 50 points, which, you know, sounds really fast, and it is. But the craziest part is your goal is to average the fastest three laps. So it's not about going out in 47 and then, you know, your last one's 55. It's about trying to run 50s very, very even with limited recovery. And I used to be able to do it pretty consistently. I would have trouble with that now. But that was always my favorite 800-meter simulator. After running that, if you run it correctly, it's so painful. It's so horrible. you beg your coach to put you in an 800 so you never have to do that workout again.
Yeah, that's a workout that you love to you kind of love-hate relationship with it. Those that know.
You know, I know I need it, but I dread it every year. I mean, it's just the worst.
And it's hard, you know, to have it in any race, but, you know, the 800 is one where it's that almost now a long sprint as opposed to a middle distance event. But you have to get your mind and body used to running in such a high level of fatigue or higher levels, you know, of lactic acid, you know, that you really – If you don't try to get yourself there in workouts, you're going to have a tough time getting through that feeling in a race. And not pleasant to get there, that has to be done.
But as you see times come down throughout the season, a lot of that comes from the fact that the workouts get more specific, and races certainly help get your body prepared to race more. And peaking is the hardest thing that a coach and athlete will learn to do, peaking at the right time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if an athlete's peaked right, the difference of 10 or 14 days can be very significant. The best coaches are the ones that can peak their athletes to the day, and it's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You've talked about, you know, a lot of great things that I think are so important as for kids to grab a hold of, you know, the team aspect from your support system. What are some of the more, you know, important experiences and life lessons that you've taken from some of your different stops, you know, at high school in Idaho? You've talked a lot about Willamette, I think, but, you know, as a professional athlete as well, what have been some of your great takeaways from some of those, whether it's about, you know, prioritizing work, life, social balance, or just, you know, about managing running. And I listened to one of your podcasts and talking about, you know, the experience at your first U.S. Championships being such a motivator for you and Run Gum to support other people, to not have to feel so alone out there. What have been some of the big experiences that have helped you through and defined your career?
I mean, that's a big question because we're covering a lifetime of experiences. But I will say probably the most important lesson I learned along the way that is something that I still do to this day is to literally not just in a cute way, but literally define what your priorities are and order them in importance to you. So in high school, for example, my family came first. You know, getting good grades came second and sports came third. And then becoming an Eagle Scout came fourth and having a girlfriend came fifth. And you can see as I allocated my time and energy back in high school, you know, where things went. And of course I ended up having a good family member because I made that my number one priority. Of course I ended up getting good grades because that was my number two priority, and a pretty good runner and a really crappy Eagle Scout and a really crappy guy being a girlfriend because that was my fifth priority. You know, and fast forward a few years into college, and I'm being pulled in, you know, five different directions again. And once again, I put family at number one and school at number two and athletics at number three and social life at number four. And you can see as I allocate, you know, there's only so many hours in the day and there's only so much energy. And if it had come down to studying late to make sure I got a good grade versus getting to bed early so that I had a great workout the next day, you know, my first few years in college, I would always choose studying, and my workouts would suffer. And it wasn't until my senior year when I actually wrote it down. I mean, I always write my priorities down, and I flipped athletics above academics, that my time started coming down, and my grades really started suffering. You know, and that was a conscious decision that I made because I said to myself, I need to find out how good I can be with this running thing. You know, I don't recommend that for everybody, but at the time it was a risk that I was willing to take. And now at 33, I'm having to do the exact same thing again. Family still comes first. It always does for me. But instead of running being my number one priority, business is actually my number one priority. Sorry. So family, business, running, as opposed to family, running, business. And I think, you know, I think that I can still be a great runner while focusing on Run Gum. Sometimes those two things go hand in hand, but I'm not in a position now where it's just me worrying about my own wants and needs. Run Gum employs several people whose paychecks depend on me navigating that ship. As the CEO, I need to make sure that business is running smoothly. So, it's a natural transition. It's one that I've been wanting to make for a while, and I'm going to continue to run as hard as I can and put everything I have into running, but only once my first two priorities have been taken care of.
Yeah. That's awesome and such great advice for young kids. I mean, and I think when you talk about the intentionality of, you know, literally defining your priorities and literally writing down your goals and literally writing down the roadmap to get to those just provides so much clarity, so much accountability for them to make sure that you're living your life in accordance to those priorities and goals, and it can help you refocus if you get off. But that's such terrific advice for young kids to really spend some time being intentional, thinking about what it is they want and how to prioritize. That's awesome.
Yeah, the hardest. I honestly think the hardest part about any goal is just figuring out what you want it to be. So many people don't know what they want. Once you know what you want, you just work your ass off to get it. The hardest part is figuring out exactly and writing it down. What do you want? I want Run Gum to be a $1 billion company. That's what I want. Now I just got to work hard to get it. But figuring out what I wanted was the hard part. I floated through 2014 kind of dazed and depressed because I couldn't run. I had what could have been a career ending injury in my knee. And it wasn't until, you know, Sam and I sat down and said, hey, with this season, you know, put on a hold, we now have the time and energy to do something that we've always wanted to do, and let's bring Run Gum to life. Let's finally create this company that we've been wanting to create. Once I realized that that's what I really wanted to be doing, I was no longer depressed. I just threw everything I had into it, and at the time, I remember thinking 2014 was going to be the worst year of my life, and it ended up being the best, one of the best. So, I'm really grateful to have had a mentor like Coach Sam to tell me, hey, figure out what you want, and then let's work towards it.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And some of those things that you think are devastating can lead to big opportunities or big learning experiences. But talking about Run Gum is a great segue into us spending a little bit of time talking about this. I really want people to understand and know that, like, your humbleness and generosity to spend your time freely doing this as a resource for people is something that we're super grateful for. But we definitely want to also educate people on the terrific opportunity that could be available from your product, from Run Gum. And so if they don't happen to be super familiar with it, obviously, you know, they can look you up on the web. But could you tell them a little bit about exactly what Run Gum is?
Yeah, it's a product that my coach and I created out of necessity. I knew that winning and losing in the 800 or in many events could come down to just, you know, tiny percentages, fractions of a second. So having stimulants, legal stimulants that would allow me to get an edge on my competition was really important for us to find. And we were drinking coffee. We were taking, you know, legal pills, legal stimulants. We were drinking energy drinks and energy shots. And I found the exact recipe that I wanted, but every source of it required me to drink something. And I just didn't want anything in my stomach. It's a slow absorption. You have these heavy liquids sloshing around in your stomach. It causes gastrointestinal distress for a lot of people. And I was just thinking, this is absurd. I, with my degree in biochemistry, I knew that we could absorb the stimulants that I wanted through the lining of the gums. It's called sublingual absorption. But there had to be a way to deliver the stimulants. And, you know, I don't remember if I was watching a commercial for Nicorette or if I saw someone chewing tobacco, but I'm like, there's a better way, and gum is that answer. So we took everything that's in an energy drink, caffeine, taurine, and B vitamins, and we infused them into a couple pieces of chewing gum, and we packaged those pieces in a pack called Run Gum. There's three different flavors, fruit, mint, and cinnamon, so everyone can find one that they like. and you chew a piece or two for about 5 to 10 minutes. You absorb all the active ingredients, and you feel this immediate boost in energy and focus. I use it before I work out, but I find that it's probably most effective for me before I go into some of my meetings. You know, this cognitive enhancement is very, very noticeable when you chew Run Gum. And when people try it, they're dubious. They say, I've tried energy products before. But I mean, take my word for it. Give it a try. And if you don't feel an immediate boost in energy and focus, text me and tell me I'm a liar. But I created this product because I really believe in it. I've used it in international competition. I use it daily. My entire team uses it daily. And I can't sing its praises enough, not just because I created it, because I really believe in it. And if you go to RunGum.com, you can buy it there. You can get it on Amazon. And at RunGum.com, you can go and visit a landing page that shows you all of the retailers that we have throughout the United States. And I, in Illinois and in the Midwest, we have many, many great retailers that carry it.
That's fantastic. And I think the other thing that is so incredible is, I mean, you talked about your goal for Run Gum to be a $1 billion company. And I know that a lot of your motivation to see that kind of revenue isn't so Nick Simmons can be, you know, multimillionaire. Not that that would be a bad thing. But you have a deep desire, passion, enthusiasm to help runners out there. You know how difficult that road is to try to be a world-class runner, to assemble the team that you've talked about on, you know, such little money that's available from other corporate sponsors. And, you know, I have a passion for track and field as well. I'm lucky to get to do a job I love every day by coaching in college. But the way that you want to use Run Gum to support track and field in this country, I think, is just fantastic.
Well, thanks so much. I mean, as in any sport or many walks of life, money talks. And in the world track and field, where there's very limited money, it talks real loudly, because right now you've got a whole bunch of people. And I'm not just talking about the athletes. I'm talking about coaches and agents and business and governing body administrators. They're all fighting for scraps. And there's so much money in track and field, it just doesn't go where it's supposed to go. And Run Gum is going to do everything we can to make sure that the money ends up in the pockets of the athletes, because without the athletes, you don't have a sport. And too many people that control the sport have forgotten that one critical fact. You know, long after I'm an athlete, long after these policies really don't affect me, I'm going to fight every single day to make sure that the athletes get what they deserve. And they're not getting that. Over 50% of American professional track and field athletes live below the poverty line, and it doesn't need to be that way. The powers that be try to tell those athletes that there's just not enough money to go around while they fly around in private jets and eat caviar and drink champagne every night. That's just not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, not at all. Well, it's great stuff that you are doing for our sport, that you've done, you know, just as a voice for those who are afraid to speak up, to your goals as a company, the things that the excitement that you've brought as an athlete, watching you run and represent the country, even if it's not always reciprocated by the country and the governing body, has been great. I know Randy is so thankful for your generosity, for your time, and sharing your experience and knowledge. Illinois Top Times is so thankful that you're willing to just spend, you know, a half hour or more here with us tonight when you're a busy guy. And it's awesome for the sport, and we're just very thankful for your time. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure.